The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning, glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway as it warms up here. I hope you are having a good spring elsewhere. Look, we're running a contest today. What did Kamala say? I will do the rundown shortly, but first let's play cut number seven. What does Kamala Harris mean? Cut number seven.
We also recognize, just as it has been in the United States for Jamaica, one of the issues that has been presented as an issue that is economic in the way of its impact has been the pandemic. So to that end, we are announcing today also that we will assist Jamaica in COVID recovery by assisting in terms of the recovery efforts in Jamaica that have been essential to, I believe, what is necessary to strengthen not only the issue of public health, but also the economy.
Okay, we'll come back and play that with the Jeopardy music at the end of the segment. 1-800-520-1234, if you know what Vice President Kamala Harris means. Meanwhile, the rundown. Russian officials are reeling as President Putin gets angry. The United States intelligence community reporting that Putin feels misled by Russian military on Ukraine. You think so? The U.S. intelligence think Russian President Vladimir Putin, according to the Washington Post, feels misled by the Russian military. Putin didn't even know his military was using and losing conscripts in Ukraine, showing a clear breakdown in the flow of accurate information of the Russian president, said the U.S. official. We believe that Putin is being misinformed by advisors about how badly the Russian military is performing and how the Russian economy is being crippled by sanctions because his senior advisors are afraid to tell him the truth. But Russian troops are still near Kyiv, and they're playing around near Chernobyl again, which is never a good idea. The head of British intelligence confirmed that Russia's Putin has brass around him, afraid to reveal Ukraine blunders. Sir Jeremy Fleming, which is a fine name given Ian Fleming, of course, but his advisors are, quote, afraid to tell him the truth. Sir Jeremy said he, quote, overestimated the abilities of his military to secure a rapid victory. It isn't getting any better. The U.S. cast doubt on the Kremlin, saying we're not going to do much more. Israel is in the middle of the deadliest terror wave since the Second Intifada, with 11 people killed in three incidents over 1 week. So the Prime Minister Bennett told those who are licensed to carry their weapons, please. President Biden is going to announce another massive release of oil reserves, which really doesn't do much on the market. It's another gesture in a presidency of gestures run by a gesture of presidencies. We get the oil reserve. You can, however, if you're over 50, go get your second booster. I signed up for mine today. Yesterday, I signed up. Go in at 4 o'clock today, get my second booster. I'm going abroad in a couple of weeks with Dash. Dash, you can get another booster?
I just had a booster 4 weeks ago. There's no way I'm getting another one this soon.
No, you can't get another. But you'll be fine in Europe.
Sure.
I haven't had one since, I think, August, maybe September. I have to go look at my card somewhere. And thought, you know, I got the new B2 variant running around. I might as well get the booster. If I get sick over there, I don't want to get very sick. I don't think so. Speaking of which, turns out they've got six spaces left on the boat. If you would like to come along, you can send Dash Patterson, dpatterson at hughhewitt.com, a note, and he will connect you up with our friends at Forsh. I'm looking right now for her.
Or, as we like to call them, Frosh.
Frosh. That's Dash, if you would just get it right once. Their number is 818-762-0676. Amy is there. 818-762-0676. 818-762-0676. Some people canceled on the boat, not on our trip, but other people And so they have three or four cabins left if you want to go along. When do we leave, Dash? I have no idea when this happens.
It's coming up. April 18th is when we fly out. I think everybody else is flying on the 19th.
Okay.
We're going a day early.
All right. So they're going on the show will be, snappier that day. So that's coming up. Facebook. Big Washington Post story this morning. Hired a GOP firm, Targeted Victory. It's a good firm. By the way, it's a very good firm, run by some very smart people, to malign TikTok. I wouldn't say malign. I would say inform people about it. TikTok is really a bad thing. You want your kids nowhere near TikTok. It is simply a giant funnel to the Chinese Communist Party of everything about them, what they like, what they don't like, what they say, don't say, what they produce. They just got a big file in the big head of Xi Jinping. And Meta doesn't like him either because of money reasons. But Facebook hired, I don't know why that's a story. Pretty much everybody hires everybody in this town to do that. 401k savings plans get a boost in a bipartisan retirement bill. Apparently, our old friend Kevin Brady and Dick Neal, who's chair of House Ways and Means, have agreed they got to up the amount you can contribute. And up the age at which you have to begin to take it, because, of course, people are figuring out Americans are working longer and longer. 72 now, they're going to make you start taking your money out of your 401k, which is just about the time I plan to retire. Karl Rove has a new story in the Wall Street Journal. 2022 midterm strategy pulls Democrats apart. I love that. I got to come back to that on Rove. The Telegraph, Great Britain's great newspaper, has a story by Alistair Heath this morning, a column. It begins this way. America is in desperate need of a determined and visionary leader, but it's found itself stuck with an ineffective, erratic, and gaffe-addled figurehead. Joe Biden is U.S. president in name only, the weakest, least powerful holder of that office for over a century. He isn't America's de facto chief executive, let alone its commander-in-chief. He is, at best, its non-executive chairman. Even polite opinion in Washington is best desperate to keep the charade that the buck stops with him. Oh, my. The neighbors have noticed. We're in trouble now. Don't go anywhere, America. I'll be right back. More ahead on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Morning, glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt live inside the Beltway on this Thursday morning. I hold grudges. Not for long, but sometimes I hold a grudge. In 2016, the Cleveland Indians were one game away from becoming World Series winners since 1948, first time. And then the Cubs beat them. So I don't think I've talked to Governor Ricketts since then. He's the governor of Nebraska, but he's on the board of the Cubs. But I'm going to put that aside because he's doing a very good thing in Nebraska right now. He's standing up against the instinct of elected politicians to spend every dollar in the Treasury, including COVID dollars. Governor Ricketts, welcome back, and don't bring up the Cubs.
All right, I won't. But I might point out it was 1908 since the last time we won a World Series.
It still isn't fair. I'm just, you got in the way. Are they bringing back football to Nebraska this year? Because I'm a Big Ten guy, and, we would like to have a team back there again.
Oh, I know. Last year was just terrible. We lost 9 games by less than a touchdown each. So we got to have some better luck, and we got Coach Frost is making some changes on the team, so hopefully we'll see some better performance on the field.
The one thing that never fails to be true is that I can bring anyone on in the state of Nebraska, and they will know everything about Big Red football. It's really absolutely – it's not true about any other state. Nebraska, they know everything about their team. Governor, let's get serious. Your legislature has a big lake of money that they're trying to spend, and you said no. Tell us everything about this because I applaud you.
Sure, absolutely. So – during the pandemic, the federal government launched the Emergency Rental Assistance Program, otherwise known as ERAP, to help out renters and landlords who were being impacted by the pandemic. And this is something that when we have emergencies, we provide extra assistance. We do it during tornadoes and floods. Certainly the people in Nebraska always stand up and help their neighbors as well. And in fact, the state of Nebraska is in the process through all these different federal programs of either distributing or has distributed over $21 billion to people in Nebraska or different organizations. So it's been a lot of money that's coming into our state. And at some point, we got to acknowledge that the emergency is over, that we don't need the assistance anymore because we've gotten back to normal. Last June, as a matter of fact, I ended the pandemic emergency in Nebraska. Our unemployment rate is the lowest in the nation, and not only the lowest in the nation, but the lowest in state history. We have 16,000 more people employed today than we do pre-pandemic. We've got more people employed today in our second largest segment, manufacturing, than we've had any time since June of 2008. So it's hard to justify that we need additional relief. Yet the federal government has proposed or is actually distributing the second round of emergency rental assistance, so ERAP 2. And the kicker is this money isn't even tied to the pandemic before. So with the first round of ERAP, you had to show you were COVID impacted. You had to upload a lot of information, and we looked to be able to make sure we prevented fraud in this because there's frankly a lot of fraud. About 15% of the applications we're getting are fraudulent, coming from foreign IP addresses, people stealing Nebraska driver's licenses on the dark web, that sort of thing. So there's a lot of fraud in this program. In fact, both OMB GAO have said that this is a high-risk program and the Treasury's not doing enough to prevent fraud. But set that aside, the second round is just about subsidizing people's rent for the next 3 years. That's not who we are in Nebraska. You know, this is big government socialism. We don't need to be taking money just to pay people's rent. We take money when people need help, when we've got assistance. But the numbers just don't show that we have this, a need here in Nebraska to take this money. So I decline to take the second round of the emergency rental assistance. Nebraska is one of two states, Nebraska and Arkansas, both declined to take the second round. And now my legislature is trying to force me to take the second round. And so we're going to be fighting. I vetoed the bill that they passed, and then we're going to be fighting a veto override probably today in the Nebraska legislature. So, trying to make sure we don't take this big government socialism and just get people, you know, reliant on for the federal government more.
It's like any addiction, Governor. If you are overridden by your legislature, and I hope you are not, 3 years from now, the withdrawal will be much worse for people. The distortions in the housing market that come from COVID rental payments, where they are no longer not able to work, are extraordinary. They will distort the market for a decade to come. Do your legislators not know that?
Well, that's what we've been working to try and get them to understand, that this is just going to be something that just creates more of that big government socialism. But Hugh, it's probably even more insidious than that. Think about what happens 3 years from now, especially if we have Democrats in the House and the Senate and the White House. This is going to become a permanent program. We're going to always have to subsidize people's rent because, oh my gosh, how did we ever get along when people had to go to work and pay their rent, right? I mean, there are certainly people who need help, and we have other ways to provide that. And it should be done at the local level. It should be done by nonprofit organizations. I mean, we have a thing called Bring Up Nebraska, where we organize community nonprofits to be able to help people who get in trouble, to help them, you know, short-term pay their rent, get their car fixed, get them back on their feet. That's the way it should be done, right, with local people getting involved, not a big government program.
No, short-term assistance for the housing challenge is very it's important not to let someone fall into homelessness. That's not what we're talking about here. This is a massive
years and years, yeah.
So tell me, Arkansas agreed not to do this, and I'm glad. If you go along with them, we'll have two states to contrast with the states that take it. Because I'm telling you, the withdrawal in 3 years of people who have been getting rental assistance, it will destroy those people in 3 years. And nobody wants to hear it. Are you making progress with your legislators?
It's going to be a very close vote. I was on the phone last night talking to state senators, making the case. There's lots of misinformation out there with regard to this program. So, and of course, some of the arguments are just, it's free federal money. Just take it. And you can always send it back later if you don't want it. And of course, that's not how emergency assistance programs work. We're not supposed to just take it because it's out there. I mean, that's just a fundamentally wrong attitude that we have. I mean, this is what our founders warned about, that when people learn they can vote themselves money out of the Treasury, that's going to be the end of our republic. So we've got all sorts of reasons that people are trying to say, and that's why I'm trying to overcome them and just dispel some of the misinformation out there about how the program works and make sure that people understand the principle here about trying to get people back into jobs, back into work. We've got lots of jobs available here in Nebraska. There's lots of opportunities for people to get that job and be able to pay the rent.
You know, Nebraska has a unicameral legislature. And when I say that, the people in the Steelers fans say, well, what's it got to do with camels? It's a pretty cold place. No, a unicameral legislature. You know the Steelers fans. I'm sure you do. They're like the Pirates fans. We got to slow down. How many how many people are in the one House legislature that Nebraska has?
49.
Okay.
So we have the smallest legislature in the country.
Smallest legislature, one House. That means unicameral Steelers fans. How many of them voted not to take the money the first time around?
So we have 49 senators. 26 voted to take it. There was a bunch who voted no, then some who just, like, voted present, not voted. It's like some people just couldn't even make a decision. So what I have to do is I have to be able to hold 20 votes. They have to get 30 votes to override my veto. So and we had some people who weren't in the chamber when they voted. And so some of those people told me they're with me. Some people told me they're going to vote to override me. So it's going to be a very close vote here.
Got any names you want to bring up that we should be focused on? Because honestly, this is important for the country. We have to stop taking the federal money. There is no COVID emergency right now.
Yeah, no kidding. It's mostly the Democrats that out of our legislature. I've got 17 Democrats and one Republican who always votes for the Democrats. So those are the folks that are generally pushing this. But, you know, we have to make sure that we just bring some of our middle-of-the-road Republicans along with us, who some of them voted for this. So we want to bring them on board and keep them here. So we're going to be working very hard. It's going to, you know, again, with 49 senators, I can call each one individually and talk to them about it. So that's the strategy I've been using on this one.
Well, Governor, good luck on this. I salute you. I think this is very important to set an example so that someone can see a state that that gets off the federal heroin sooner, right? Because it's going to be a train wreck if we subsidize people for three more. And what did you say about your unemployment? It's the lowest it's been. I mean, what's the rate?
Yeah, it's a 2.1% unemployment rate, the lowest in the country. We're tied with Utah as the lowest in state history.
Well, what do people do for jobs? I mean, should everyone move to Nebraska?
Absolutely. People should move to Nebraska. We got lots of jobs available in lots of different fields. So
well, I know you,
great quality of life. Hey, you know, and also we never did a shutdown. So that's one of the reasons why we have such strong economic performance. We took a balanced approach to manage the pandemic to slow the virus down, but let people live a more normal life. So we were one of the best states for kids in classrooms. In fact, Politico, not exactly known for being a conservative news organization.
Oh, it's a left-wing rag, yeah.
Yeah, ranked number one, the best pandemic response state.
Well, you know, I'm not too sure about that. I'm going to give Mike DeWine in Ohio the number one spot, but but you might be there. Go Guardians. We'll see the Cubs in the World Series. Governor Rick, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, except in 2016. Don't go anywhere, America. I bring you the stories you might not hear elsewhere. And Governor Ricketts is standing up for serious governance in Nebraska. I hope he wins. I hope he defeats the override today. If you know anyone in Nebraska, call him up. I don't really know anyone in Nebraska other than Governor Ricketts and Ben Sass. We'll find out. Stay tuned, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt.
From what I have seen of our Russian friends and allies during the war, I am convinced that there is nothing they admire so much as strength, and there is nothing for which they have less respect than for weakness, especially military weakness.
Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, live inside the Beltway. That was Winston Churchill, 1946, at his famous Iron Curtain speech in Fulton, Missouri. No one understands what Churchill was saying more than President Zelensky of Ukraine. And tomorrow, Brett Baer of Fox News gets the biggest get in the world right now, Zelensky. Brett Baer joins me now. Good morning, Brett. How are you?
Hey, Hugh. Good morning.
Great to speak with you. Tell us how you got this interview with Zelensky set up for tomorrow, because that is the world's biggest get right now.
It actually took a long time. You know, I've had the foreign minister of Ukraine on the show a couple of times, and through them, I got word to Zelensky and his press office, which is really one guy, that we would love to host him. And it's, you know, he's obviously been talking to Parliament and Congress and others, making the case around the world. He's done a few interviews, but not many. And so it took a little bit of convincing and some patience, and finally got it to come together tomorrow.
Well, congratulations. I think he's speaking to the Australian Parliament today, and he's methodic, and he talked to the Israeli Knesset earlier this week, of course, talked to Congress. But individual one-on-one interviews are rare. How are you preparing for this, Brett? Because this is, you know, the world's most famous hero right now.
Yeah, I think there are things that, you know, from our perspective, watching the Biden administration, how it's reacted to requests from the Ukrainians, how NATO is acting. I think there's a lot of questions that Zelensky himself can answer specifically. I'm preparing for it like any other big interview, as you do, kind of going through the murder boards, if you will, of how you think someone's going to answer, and then trying to get to listening to those answers and be able to elicit different reaction that maybe we haven't heard every day.
Now, I'm trying to figure out Putin. And to do that, I've been listening to Andrew Roberts. He's joining me next hour, book Walking with Destiny. I have to go back to your book, 3 Days in Moscow. Roberts is writing about Churchill. You wrote about Reagan in Moscow in 1988. I think it was the fourth of four summits that the Gipper held with Russian leaders. What do you think Putin is doing, Brett? You know Russia. You were a Pentagon correspondent. You wrote the book about Reagan in Moscow. What do you think is on Putin's mind?
Well, I think people are right to say that he had this vision of the old Soviet Union. I do think that that was correct, and I think that if you just look to a couple of the speeches, he's essentially laid out a blueprint of what he wanted, big picture. But I do think that the reaction of the Russian military and how poorly they've operated, and this intelligence yesterday that U.S. intel says that Putin was not told how poorly he was doing, which is tough to believe in today's day and age, but that's what the intel suggests. I think that there is a scaled-back vision now. At least that's what we believe, and that perhaps the eastern part and the southern part of Ukraine is where Putin's ambition is. I just don't think that Ukraine's going to suddenly negotiate all of that away and be okay with it.
I don't either. I agree with you completely on that. When you get President Zelensky, I know he's going to ask for more arms. They're getting more. I think they're getting what they need to fight to a standoff. I'm not sure. I want to go back to your book on Reagan, Brett Baer, 3 Days in Moscow. When he went, how was he received by the Russian people? Because we got to separate Putin and the Russian military and the Russian security services from the Russian people. How did Reagan get along with the Russian people?
He was received like a rock star, and to the point where Secret Service was really concerned about the people that were gathered around. And when he and Nancy went out for a walk, it was just inundated. And there's a great story about the press trying to follow him, and as they walk out into the square, and all these people come out at the woodwork, and in the kind of melee of people that are surrounding them, Helen Thomas gets pulled away, and they have to go get her. And Nancy Reagan actually grabs her and pulls her in, and they finally make it back to the house where they're staying. And someone says, you know, Mrs. Reagan, it's great, and the Secret Service really saved Helen Thomas. And Marlon Fitzwater says, well, you didn't have to do that. You know, so... But he was really received as a rock star, and to the point where part of the book deals with the speech that was largely overlooked because of the other coverage of the substance of the treaties that were being signed. But this speech to Moscow State University students, in which Reagan essentially says, under a bust of Lenin, that communism is never going to work, and that the world is ready to have an outreach with you. These are the students, communist students in Soviet-controlled Moscow, in which Reagan is giving this speech, which is really quite something.
And it reminds us that beneath Putin and the security services and the Russian military and these poor conscripts who are being sent into Russia have no idea where they're into Ukraine. They have no idea where they're going. The Russian people remain a great people. And I don't know what Zelensky's going to do. I have never been to Ukraine. I have no idea. My daughter has done two mission trips to Ukraine back when it was just free of Soviet control. They have thousands and thousands of churches. It's both Orthodox and Catholic. It's a very church community. When you were at the Pentagon, Brett, did the Ukraine ever come up as a then sphere of the Soviet Union? or is the new kind of course you were there after the fall. Did it ever figure in any of your reporting as an independent entity? I mean, it just never really made national
news.
Really
I think I went to Kyiv with maybe General Myers. I went to 75 countries, some of them only for a few hours, and I believe we made a stop in Ukraine as there was an effort to court New Europe, if you remember the Rumsfeld New Europe, Old Europe.
Yep.
So I'd been there a couple of times, but you're right, it had not bubbled up other than the Orange Revolution that obviously the U.S. was supportive of.
Well, one of the difficult things that Zelensky will face, even if he wins, is he still has a huge Russian-speaking population. I don't know if Zelensky speaks Russian, but it is definitely an ethnically diverse country. I don't know if you'll get to that. Let me talk to you a moment about the Pentagon reporting that's going on, because I remind the audience, before Brett became the host of Special Report, he was the Pentagon reporter for Fox. What do you think the Pentagon is trying to tell our people? You've got great Pentagon correspondents. There are other great ones like Courtney Kuby over at NBC. What do you think these off-the-record briefings are attempted to accomplish?
Well, I think they're trying to say what exactly the U.S. is doing and what we're not doing. And there is a bright line there with the Biden administration. Jack Keane, General Jack Keane, yesterday had this really interesting take on Martha's show in which he said, we are not, as an administration and as a country, 100% convincing that we want Ukraine to win. He's saying that, there's a lot of evidence that the administration wants Zelensky to take a deal and has communicated that. I think the Pentagon is trying to say specifically what's going in, how they're getting it in, and what we're not doing. I do think that the interesting thing about the training, when the president said we were training troops in Poland, and all of the walk back that they can't say that they're training them. I mean, we had special forces on the ground inside Ukraine training Ukrainians, and yet now it's verboten to speak about training in Poland. It's really interesting.
It's very odd. About 4 months ago, we had special forces in Ukraine, 4 months before the invasion. So it's not like a new thing, but boy, did they don't know what they're communicating. General Austin, Secretary Austin, is so different from Secretary Rumsfeld, who you mentioned earlier. And I don't know that we've ever had as tight-lipped. I saw your interview with Secretary Austin at the Reagan Defense Forum. Have you ever seen a Secretary of Defense less out front than Lloyd Austin?
No. He's very, very reticent to do any public interview. And, and I think that he's a behind-the-scenes kind of operator and has been, in his career as a general and now as secretary. But you're right, he does not come out often. And when he does, he usually makes news because we don't hear from him a lot.
Admiral Kirby is out there every day. He's a good briefer. I listen to Admiral Kirby because he's a very good briefer.
He's strong.
Very. And he knows what he's talking about. That's the key thing at the Pentagon. He's not shining anyone on when he says something you can trust it. In terms of these switchblade drones, that's the hot new thing that they're talking about. Did you know they existed before we started sending them to Ukraine?
I knew we had the technology. I didn't know that specific drone existed and what exactly it did. And it's interesting that they're rolling those out publicly in some place like Ukraine. But it's a very effective tool and one that obviously takes the threat of manned aircraft away from you.
Last question, Brett, about tomorrow night's interview with Volodymyr Zelensky, President Zelensky of Ukraine. He's obviously got a target on his back. He got a lot of target. There's a report this morning that 1,000 Wagner mercenaries are looking for him. I don't know whose disinformation that is. How do you get to someone's level of courage? I mean, how do you get that to display?
We're going to try to get there a number of different ways and a number of different questions. I think the best ways in a conversation, and I have a lot of time with him. I have 40 minutes.
Oh my goodness!
With the president. So now, a lot of that's going to be translation, he's, you know, choosing to do Ukrainian. However, there will be times, I think, where I get him to answer in English, and or at least I'm hoping. And I think that some of that will translate, much like it did, to his address in Congress.
That's an ocean of time. Will you be using that also on Sunday, on Fox News Sunday?
We will. And so we'll split it up into two parts on Special Report, and then there'll be a part that airs on Fox News Sunday.
Brett Baer, congratulations. Biggest get in the world. I know you're working hard on it. I appreciate it. I recommend everyone also read 3 Days in Moscow if they want to know what Putin is an heir to. It's an heir to a great people and an egregious legacy of inhumanity. Brett Baer, thank you. Don't go anywhere, America. I'm coming right back. I'm going to talk after the break with Jim Talent about what we just heard from Brett Baer, what to do. Coming right back with Jim Talent, America. Stay tuned. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined by Jim Talent of the Bipartisan Policy Center. Follow him on Twitter, at Jim Talent. He's, of course, former senator from Missouri. Good morning, Senator. How are you?
Well, I'm fine. You?
Talking to Brett Baer about his interview tomorrow with Zelensky. What would you ask Zelensky if you could right now?
Well, I wouldn't ask him publicly, I think, because I don't want to compromise him. But what I'd really like to know is what his bottom line is for an agreement, and particularly with regard to the Donbass. I mean, it's pretty clear that he basically has agreed that they're not going to join NATO. And why should they? They're defending the country pretty well on their own. You know what I mean? They're doing a great job. But the issue is he willing to allow Putin to remain in the eastern part of the country in the Donbass or not? Because I think if he's not, it's going to be hard for him to get to an agreement with Putin, which is what they need to end the war.
Now, Mariupol, so people understand, especially the Steelers fan, the Donbass is separated from Crimea. They took Crimea by sea. They took Donbass by land in 2014, and they're attempting to link the two, and Mariupol is in the middle of that linkage.
Yes.
So is the demand going to be Mariupol or bust from Putin, do you think?
I think that what Putin now wants is what, from his perspective, he should have wanted in the beginning, which is to occupy the Donbass, the east-southeastern province, and build a land bridge to Crimea. So, I mean, the other question I would ask Zelensky is, look, what are the chances that these counterattacks you've been mounting around Kiev, that you're really going to be able to step those up and begin driving the Russian troops back along any kind of a broad front in the country? Because if you can, that changes the military situation on the ground and strengthens his leverage. So I don't think we're at a phase of the war. It looks like a stalemate, but I think what's really the issue here is, do the Ukrainians have enough left as the Russians continue to weaken, which is what I expect, to be able to drive them back on a broad front? And then Putin may have to accept Zelensky's terms.
I'm going to talk with Rob Portman after the break. I assume we are still flooding them with new weaponry, including these Switchblade drones and other things that they haven't used before, man pads and stingers, and maybe shore-to-ship missiles. But they can resupply even as Russia retreats to Belarus and repairs. Do you think a second round of all-out Russian fighting will be as ineffective as the first round?
Yeah, I would expect so. This has to be, and these sanctions have to be undercutting their war-fighting ability. Which, and then I don't see really a lot of signs that they're getting operationally any better. I love what Tom Cotton told you the other day about how this shows the importance of infantry.
Yes.
It sure does when you're not fighting a combined arms operation. I mean, you know, they've basically been sending columns out which are extremely vulnerable unless they have, even I know that, if they don't have infantry protecting them from the anti-tank weapons and the other kind of precision weapons that the Ukrainians have. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, but I've thought, and I'm not sure anybody knows, and if they do know, they're not telling you. I mean, you had it is interesting what Brett was just saying about what the Pentagon's willing to say and not say. But I've got to believe that Putin's ability to reconstitute the force and re-energize it is going down.
You know, my question for Zelensky, which I didn't give to Brett because people give you all sorts of questions on the air that you have to respond to, and maybe you don't like them, is the concern has been voiced that if we give them certain weaponry, it will fall into the wrong hands. It's the Mujahideen objection. What do you make of that objection and its merits in Ukraine?
Yeah, it's an objection which paralyzes us from doing anything in situations like this. I think it has to be rejected. We have a policy, which is to support them up to the point where it would require the use of American troops. And it would really be nice if the administration just stuck with that policy on both ends of it. In other words, give them the fighter aircraft that they can use it. That's our policy. But not talk about either regime change, which is not the ultimate goal we've claimed we wanted, or American troops showing up somehow in Ukraine. You know, I think the president needs to just start reading exactly what he's told and not or given to read and not saying anything else. I mean,
you heard Senator Cotton yesterday. It's just not safe. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, and I don't say this. I agree with. I love that interview. I always love Tom's interviews. But I mean, I don't say this as somebody trying to score a political point. It's just harmful when he ad-libs and goes off like this. And evidently, he can't seem to stop doing it.
He's been doing it forever, but he's never been president before, and he's never been 79 years before.
Yeah. The problem is, how do you go if you're clean? How do you go to the president and say, Mr. President, we really don't want you speaking extemporaneously anymore? It's kind
You play him the Cotton interview, and you play him this interview. And that's how you do it.
We want you to listen to this UU interview here.
No, actually, you're listening to a current senator and a former senator who are defense-minded, and they do not wish you ill. They just wish to protect the country.
You mentioned defense. You saw the defense budget, so we're losing to inflation again. It's just...
It's ridiculous. More on that next week.
Freaking force, you.
It is. The military-industrial complex ain't what it used to be. Jim Talent, follow him on Twitter at Jim Talent. Thank you. Andrew Roberts joins me next after I talk with Ohio Senator Rob Portman about what are we going to keep doing for Ukraine. Stay tuned, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. They're with Sierra Pacific. They lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Morning, Glory America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt, live inside the Beltway, joined by Rob Portman, senator from Ohio, longtime friend of the show. Good morning, Senator Portman. Welcome back.
Good morning, Hugh. Thanks for having me on, pal.
Well, you know, Ohio has got one of the largest concentrations of Ukrainian Americans in the United States. So I know you're hearing from them. What are you hearing from them?
Do more and do it more quickly. I actually was on the Polish border about 2 weeks ago, and lo and behold, there were Ohioans there helping the refugees. You know some of them, Andy Fute, perhaps you remember.
Yep. Yep.
And what they were doing is helping to deal with a crisis, you know, at the Polish border. But what they were really focused on was how can we do more to keep Vladimir Putin and the war machine from wiping out cities in Ukraine and destroying homes and killing innocent civilians. And what they're thinking is, you know, with the United States and other NATO allies and NATO allies of ours and others would provide more surface-to-air missiles to stop these bombs, you know, artillery attacks, particularly coming in at night on these cities, that they can win it on the ground. And that's what they're really asking for. So it's planes, it's anti-aircraft systems, it's anti-ship systems, enabling them to win this war.
You know, we just had Brett Baer on the show, and Brett is interviewing President Zelensky tomorrow for 40 minutes. And my suggested question is the one that I hear about the Mujahideen issue, which is if we send them Switchblade drones, which are the most advanced drones we have, how do we keep them out of the hands of terrorists? Is that a concern of yours, Senator?
Well, it's always a concern, Hugh, but it's a very different situation. Mujahideen were not an organized military force, and frankly, as you know, they were kind of going with whatever side was convenient for them. This is an allied country. We've trained their military. One reason they're doing so well, frankly, is we did provide that training. You know, they are our strong and trusted ally, government to government. So it's a very different situation. Not saying that we shouldn't be concerned about it, but it is a very different situation. Second is that they're actually winning on the ground. In other words, if these drones, and by the way, we're only providing 100 Switchblade drones. They're suicidal drones, meaning they attack one target and that's it. So we need to do more of that, in my view, including providing some more sophisticated drones that we use against ships, which we have apparently, which would be similar but larger. So I think it's in our interest to have Vladimir Putin lose and to have the Ukrainian people and freedom win.
It is very much in our interest that. Now, the president, who is your longtime friend, I mean, you served with Joe Biden for how many years, Senator Portman?
Well, I didn't serve in the Senate when he was here because I was in the House then, but I have known him off and on and, you know, obviously watched him in action as vice president. I wouldn't say we're friends, but I would say that he's a different Joe Biden in some respects. He's more progressive on policy issues, including energy issues, which is related directly to this crisis, because unless we can provide countries around the world, including countries in Europe who depend on Russian oil and gas, more help in terms of our energy, which we have plenty of, then they will continue to feed the war machine, because the number one receipt that Vladimir Putin gets every day is from these countries that buy his oil and gas. We were spending, as you know, about $50 million a day on average for oil from Russia. It was crazy. But they're spending much, much more in countries like Germany. So we need to make that transition. And Joe Biden doesn't seem able to get away from the, you know, progressive kind of anti fossil fuel rhetoric from the campaign to be able to actually provide that important energy resource and therefore a national security resource.
No, he definitely stuck. And the reason I thought maybe he had reached out to you, he's president of the Senate for 8 years when you were in the Senate. And I asked Senator Cotton, have you heard from the Biden White House? And the answer is no. Have you heard from the president as a former colleague when he was president of the Senate, as a former director of OMB, and as someone who knows this issue from the largest Ukrainian-American community in the United States outside of New York City? Has he called you up to talk to you about this?
I have talked to him. I took the last delegation into Ukraine, which was probably a month ago now, 3 weeks ago. And, probably about 5 weeks ago now, because it was just before the invasion. And when we got back, to his credit, he did call us into a classified setting and had a discussion with us. And it was a small group. There's four of us. So I've had some discussions like that. But, I don't think he is looking particularly for advice from Republicans right now. I think he's trying to figure out, how to keep Democrats on board. He met yesterday, as I understand it, with the Progressive Caucus as well as the more centrist caucus in the House, and got different advice from each. But, you know, his poll numbers are relatively low. He's looking for support from his base, I guess. He should be instead saying, here we are with a war on our hands, and the ability to work across the aisle in this instance is clear. You know, we've been very bipartisan in how we've approached this. Republicans and Democrats alike want to stand up for Ukraine and freedom and against tyranny and what Putin is doing. So it's an opportunity for him. And particularly on energy, an opportunity to say, okay, we're for all of the above, including renewables and including nuclear and including hydrogen and, you know, the new technologies. But right now, there is an absolute imperative that we produce more of our own energy, both for getting gas prices down in America and other energy prices. But also, again, this is directly related to this conflict. If we can tell the Europeans and others, look, we're going to back you up with some of this liquefied natural gas, they are far more likely to stop their dependency and stop sending money to Russia.
Senator Portman, the rules I've always operated under with W and with former President Trump is that if you go to talk to him, you never tell people what they say, but it's okay for you to say what you say. So what did you tell the president?
Well, first of all, you learned that rule when you worked in the White House, and I learned it too. We were both associate counsels to the president. And when you're in the Oval Office, you don't say what they say you. But I can tell you what I've said to him consistently, which is you have an opportunity here. As you know, I said it in relation to the COVID relief, when they ended up going with their own legislation, going it alone, and spending almost $2 trillion, the largest legislation ever passed. I went down there to the White House with other Republicans who were willing to work with them and said, we can come up with something here that makes sense, that doesn't break the bank, that focuses just on COVID. Most of that $2 trillion, by the way, did not focus on COVID. And as a result, as you know, we have this 40-year high in inflation. We have an economy that's struggling because people's wages aren't keeping up with that inflation. And so, you know, that's an example. Energy is another example. So I'm frank with him when I talk to him about an opportunity for us to do what he said he wanted to do during his campaign. Recall, he ran as the moderate. It was Bernie Sanders who was the progressive.
Right.
And yet, in respect, he's campaigning like Bernie Sanders. He's governing like Bernie Sanders after having campaigned as someone who wanted to reach across the aisle and get some things done.
You know, Senator, if I were in your position, I might vote for Judge Brown Jackson to be Justice Brown Jackson, as Susan Collins announced yesterday, because I might want to be in a position to deal with Team Biden from that position of having supported their nominee. Have you made up your mind yet?
I have not made my mind because I always, as you know, Hugh, I wait until the hearings are done, the dust is settled. The vote will be in the hearing in the Judiciary Committee, I think, on Monday. And then I'll make up my mind. But I've been pretty clear that I'm not interested in supporting someone who has a record of more judicial activism as she does. I think she's very bright. I met with her. I think she's personable. I think she is qualified in the sense that, you know, she has, even though it's been a very short time, judge on the second highest court. But when you look at her decisions, and I'm not so much talking about the sentencing here, I'm talking about decisions that relate to regulatory issues as an example. There's a decision where she basically substituted her judgment and the court's judgment for Congress and made up law, essentially. This is the case that you may have followed with regard to the labeling of meat products.
Yep.
And it is a classic regulatory issue, you know, where she was reversed by the relatively liberal D.C. Circuit for going too far. And I talked to her about that and talked to her about regulatory issues generally, talked to her about the hour deference issue, which you understand, and just basically says we shouldn't let agencies interpret their own rules. And we just have a different point of view. So to me, it's not personal at all. In fact, I think she's an historic pick, and it's certainly not just about the sentencing, although I think her sentencing has been too lenient in many cases. But it's really about a broader judicial philosophy that she has that I just can't support.
You see, I was inclined to support her until the hearings, but I just can't get over the sentencing stuff. Senator, let's go back to Ukraine. If the president could do one thing right now, we got 1 minute. What do you want him to do?
Provide the assistance. Look, we can do much more on sanctions. We can put more banks under the SWIFT, international transaction ban. But the most important thing right now is to give them more weapons. And second is to stop this natural gas and oil sales to the rest of the world, because that's what's funding it. This is amazing, but almost 50% of their budget is funded with oil receipts. Almost 50%. That's the biggest sanction. And countries still have not turned off the pipes and stop bringing in the natural gas and stop buying the oil. So I would say those are the two things. You know, give them what they need in terms of weapons. Give them the MiG-29s. Give them the anti-aircraft systems. Let them defend themselves. Therefore,
Senator Rob Portman from the great state of Ohio, always call myself a Portman Republican. We almost always end up seeing things the same way. Don't go anywhere, America.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.